Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone. This is Jim McGrew, Chief Client Services Officer at Ogletree Deacons. Thanks for joining us for another podcast. In this episode, Kemia Johnson, Senior Counsel in our Philadelphia office, and Michelle Wimes, our Chief Diversity and Professional Development Officer, discuss ways that employers can address diversity and inclusion in the workplace, including best practices for starting diversity and inclusion programs or improving those already in existence. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Thanks, Jim. I'm Michelle Wimes, and I'm excited to facilitate today's discussion as we look to highlight ways that employers are addressing diversity and inclusion within their organizations and to talk about the issues that they are facing. My first question for you, Kemia, is when you talk about diversity and inclusion initiatives or programs, what do you mean by that?
Oh, yes. Well, the terminology is very important, Michelle, and there is a lot of confusion out there. Often the communication around the D&I initiative is hampered because people within and outside the company are not very clear on what is meant by the quote-unquote diversity and inclusion initiative. So when some hear diversity and inclusion, they think affirmative action, others think of equal employment opportunity or EEO, and although there may be some overlap, the law treats these concepts differently. So to just walk through them briefly, if you will. So affirmative action from a legal perspective covers federal contractors and subcontractors. The laws include Executive Order 11246, the Vietnam Era Veterans Readjustment and Assistance Act, and Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act. Affirmative action prohibits discrimination by additionally requiring covered employers to take what we call proactive steps to ensure that there is opportunity for specified groups. And it's highly regulated and there are reporting requirements. But the second concept that I addressed, equal employment opportunity or EEO, refers to laws such as Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and other federal and state laws that prohibit treating people differently based on certain characteristics. These EEO laws cover most employers in the United States. The EEO laws are prohibitory and set forth what we call the general rules of the road that must be followed in the workplace. But diversity and inclusion, or D&I, refers to those efforts that employers take to increase their representation of underrepresented groups and really reap the benefits from having a diverse workforce. The courts sometimes refer to these D&I programs as voluntary affirmative action, and employers who are not federal contractors or subcontractors, and even those who are, can have a D&I program. The takeaway really with D&I is that it is voluntary, it's self-directed, and the program parameters are less defined in the law as long as the employers are operating within the EEO rules of the road. Those companies that are doing a better job with D&I, whether the legal group, human resources, the diversity department, or beyond, make it a point to ensure that all who need to know are very clear on what they mean by diversity and inclusion. So they define it for their organization at the outset. And just to give you an example, one way that organizations are clearly defining their initiative is by creating and publishing a written D&I policy or philosophy statement. So that really gives everyone clarity.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So can you tell me, Kemia, why are organizations making their diversity and inclusion initiatives a priority? We've heard so much about it in the news lately, and you know, there's just been a lot of hoopla about D&I. So why should it be a priority?
Yeah, so diversity or diversity and inclusion or D&I or IND, there are a lot of acronyms for it, but it's really a priority for many organizations for good reasons. So we have seen that a well-executed diversity and inclusion initiative has many benefits. Researchers have shown that, first, there could be tangible positive impacts on a company's bottom line. Secondly, they have shown that companies have been able to reach new or emerging consumer or client markets. Third, good D&I improves workplace culture. Fourth, it can broaden and deepen recruiting and talent management through hiring, retention, and leadership development efforts. There are really just so many reasons why companies are choosing to have a really effective and engaging D&I initiative at play.
Great. So where should companies who want to implement a diversity and inclusion initiative start? Like, where do they begin?
Yeah, so where to begin is really a big dilemma for some of the organizations and even some of the organizations that we are working with. So we advise that companies who have either not yet formalized a D&I initiative, or maybe they have, but they just need to jumpstart it, we advise that they really begin by conducting a needs assessment. The assessment process really allows the company to know where they currently are and determine areas where effort should be focused so improvements can be made. Assessment can include reviewing programs that are already in place by conducting a climate survey or employee engagement survey or speaking to current employees through focus groups or task forces. Assessment can also include gathering and analyzing employee demographic information. And we do that to really determine where the company may need efforts for increased representation. Assessment will also include really assessing the legal risks associated with D&I programs, because there are some, and putting compliance systems in place that account for those risks. So I'll just give you an example, Michelle. So a D&I initiative is going to require at some point or another that the company gather, store, access, and in one way or another report their employees' race, gender, sexual orientation, veteran status, or even disability information. But gathering employee demographic or other information is likely to be constrained by data privacy laws, such as the GDPR in Europe or even potentially California's newly enacted Consumer Privacy Act that goes into effect in 2020. So employers really need to account for these data privacy law constraints in their D&I programming by devising a system at the outset to get employees to voluntarily self-identify and provide their information. They should be providing notices around those self-identifications and ensure there is a database in place that houses the diversity data. Also, those who really need to know for the D&I initiative purposes must be able to access that diversity data. Of course, this is just one example, and there are many other ways that employers are working to assess the legal risks and put compliance systems in place.
So after the assessment and the various legal and compliance issues have been contemplated, what would you say is the next step an employer should take to start or jumpstart their D&I program?
The next step, I would say, is to create a well-thought-out, strategic, and action-oriented D&I plan.
And why is having a D&I plan important?
Well, some D&I programs we see are not as effective because there was no plan in place that everyone who is involved or could become involved could follow. So we suggest that companies really take the time and invest in putting together a D&I plan that can outline several things. First, it should outline the purpose and objectives of the program along with the action steps. It should set timelines for completion. The plan should also record budget or resource projections. It should identify the stakeholders or those who will be involved or accountable for the D&I initiative. And it should also include a means to measure the D&I program's progress.
So what are you seeing as a major D&I area that organizations are focusing on right now?
There are several. We like to call them the top five initiatives in D&I, the top five in D&I. And these are really all diversity focused and initiatives that focus on first recruitment and hiring, secondly, training, third, retention programs like employee resource groups, fourth, succession planning and promotion initiatives, and fifth, leadership engagement or development. Now, we could devote hours, as you know, to discussing any one of these areas, but perhaps I should just outline what many organizations that we see are grappling with within each of those areas. So in recruitment and hiring, many companies are trying to figure out how to include underrepresented, diverse groups in their hiring process and are exploring different programs that require what we call a diverse slate of candidates to be interviewed or considered for those jobs. These types of initiatives around requiring a diverse slate are often referred to as Rooney Rule or Mansfield type rules, but there are other initiatives that include implementing bias interrupters in the recruiting and hiring process, like having a set of interview templates for questions or removing names or identifiable information from applications so that there's a more quote unquote blind screening process. Another area that we say are in the top five is training. So training on diverse-oriented subjects such as managing a diverse workforce, unconscious bias, and cultural competence remains a priority for companies that are really trying to set some sort of foundational knowledge. Unconscious bias training can be a great beginning training topic, as well as training on managing a diverse workforce and culture competency training, because it's really something that all can get on board with. The modality of the training can be in person or it can be electronically based, and it's really important for companies to consider what works best for their workforces. The training opportunities are really getting creative, and it's really interesting to see all the different ways that companies may be able to consider rolling out training. The third area that we see companies really focusing on within their D&I initiatives are their employee resource groups, or ERGs, or business resource groups, or BRGs. And Michelle, I know that you have recently recorded and rolled out a podcast that is available that really specifies what BRGs and ERGs are and really delves into this further.
Absolutely.
So what we're seeing in this area is that these ERGs are continuing to be rolled out, but companies are really thinking more creatively about how to structure these groups, how much involvement to have with them, and how they can utilize them as a resource for the company. They can utilize them for the company's product development, consumer market, community relations, and really other aspects of the company's business. But these are groups that are not only resources for employees, but they are increasingly seen and being utilized as resources for the company and the company's business. Organizations are also working on ways to include diverse groups in their succession planning and promotion processes. And they're doing this to really ensure that all have the skills and experiences that they need to qualify, and that leaders are not coming from a place of bias and overlooking their diverse employees. So many organizations are creating experience or skill set development programs to ensure that there's a wide skill set among various diverse groups. And it's also important to ensure that transparency and objectivity is embedded into the process. So many companies are certainly focused on how to do that. So we all know what is required for the job at the outset. Finally, companies are realizing that in order for D&I to be successful, and I know that we have said this often, a lot of research really backs this up, but for D&I to really be successful, they just must have their leadership engaged, and the leadership really needs to be engaged at all levels. So these companies are focusing on ways to ensure their leaders are equipped with the D&I knowledge and resource that they need in order to lead and manage in this really dynamic arena.
That's excellent. Yeah, I know that I've seen companies treat acting inclusively as a leadership skill, and it's one that needs to be honed by leaders so that they are managing and supervising folks in an inclusive manner. And then we've also seen kind of BRG groups also being treated as a pipeline to leadership positions. So when people get that experience of leading a BRG group, the opportunity to then move into other leadership positions within a company or within a law firm creates greater opportunities for that. Let me ask you, to many, diversity and inclusion seems like it would be easy, but can you talk a little bit about what some of the roadblocks are or some of the challenges or barriers that companies may face?
Yes, Michelle, it would seem that it would be easy, but there are, in fact, many roadblocks to having a legally compliant and well-executed D&I initiative, as you know. I'll give some examples. So some companies may not have the buy-in of leadership, so that's a roadblock. Others may lack the resources or the staffing to fully implement the program or to implement it well. Others may not have a defined D&I philosophy or policy, so there's a lot of confusion around the D&I initiative, what it is, what it isn't, what is supposed to be accomplished through the program. Other companies may have resistance from their employees because of foundational culture of including folks versus excluding folks. That really just has not been established, and other companies just simply may not have a firm grasp of what the legal parameters around D&I may be. So the list, of course, could go on and on, but I would say in my experience, the biggest challenge that organizations seem to be facing is really how to measure their D&I progress.
And why would you say that measurement is such an issue?
So companies can get tangled in the web of goal setting and metrics. And this is a very complicated area because what we know is that an overemphasis on diversity metrics can be challenged as an unlawful quota or an unlawful set aside. And we certainly don't want to be there. So organizations are looking for ways to measure progress that, of course, is legally compliant. We advise that they make their D&I goals flexible and aspirational and consider them as really one part of an overall D&I program. These companies should also focus on outreach and inclusion efforts instead of really trying to hit a specific number. And they should, of course, not give any preferences to an individual based on their diversity characteristic alone. But, you know, that measurement, that data gathering and assessment process and measurement and goal setting really is a challenge for many of our companies.
Right, right. You know, we sometimes hear folks talk about D&I as a movement. Are we participating in a movement? Would you say that?
I think that the concept of a movement is really interesting, and I think it's an interesting one, and I'd say that we are. We are seeing a shift in organizational approaches to D&I right now that, frankly, we were not seeing 10, 20, or of course, certainly 30 years ago. Now organizations are thinking more holistically and strategically about D&I. They are really moving to full integration of D&I into their organization and into their organizational processes. I'd say that D&I is moving away from being a standalone or silo activity that people participate in once and then it's done, never to be raised again until the next activity. But we really expect to see D&I in recruitment or hiring or human resources. But D&I is now being reflected across departments and job titles, and people of every race, gender, sexual orientation, and even beyond are really getting involved in the D&I process. And for us, that's really progress.
So, I'd say so.
So I know you can really see this trend as well and this movement as well in the work that you've been doing.
Absolutely.
So now we see, as an example, we see D&I programming that is reflected in website design, social media and PR campaigns, vendor, supplier, contracting, acquisition processes, of course, community engagement and service. We see D&I in board composition initiatives. We see D&I in professional learning and development opportunities. It's in business operations and team interactions. Really, the list can seem endless. But I think what we are seeing is that D&I can be a powerful force within organizations and that there is real movement in the organization internally when it is done in a legally compliant way and really done right.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Well, Kimya, this has certainly been insightful. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and best practices around how employers are addressing diversity and inclusion in the workplace. It has been a pleasure to have you today. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you, Kimya and Michelle. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and will join us for our next episode. In the meantime, this is Jim McGrew wishing you much success in your workplace. So long.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.